Hi, we are Angie and Annalie, and this is Brain Basement, a podcast where two friends who used to do yoga together in a basement now chat about chaos and wellness. As moms, we understand chaos. As expats, we get what that chaos looks like when you take it overseas.
From Manila to San Jose, we share stories of living abroad and explore topics around mental and emotional well-being. This podcast is for expat moms who want to find wellness amidst the chaos of everyday life. Welcome to Brain Basement. We're so glad you're here. All right, here we go. Talking about who we talk to when we're sad. That's our discussion today. And to start our discussion, let's be mindful of our breath. So just checking in for 3 minutes and three breaths. Taking that time, wherever you are in your day, to drop into your body, listen to your lungs, feel the inhale and exhale that carries us through all of our days and nights, that happens without us paying any attention to it. And just notice where your breath is in this moment. Allowing some release and relaxation to wash over your body as you check in with that breath. And just without any judgment, really feeling the sensation of your lungs filling with oxygen and your belly releasing and your muscles releasing on each exhale. To be present with this amazing process that we have had since birth, that will carry us through the days and the weeks and years ahead. And then as you're filled with that gratitude and awareness of your breath, bringing that awareness and appreciation back into the present moment as you flutter your eyes open, as you allow that energy to expand and bring it into our conversation with friends, into our talk. Annalie and I look forward to these talks each week. I don't know if we're here just for us, but certainly if anyone else is out there listening and joining in this conversation, we're happy to have you. This is my nourishing moment each week. How about you, Annalie? How are you?
Hey. No, I totally agree. I feel so much better after our conversations, no matter how stressed I am or how fast I'm running through my day. It just feels better after I've chatted with Angie. So here we are.
It's true, right? It's awesome. Like, I have the same thing, that a conversation with a good friend. So this is kind of what we're talking about today, right? Like, how do we have a conversation? Who do we go to? Do we talk to ourselves? Do we talk to our mom? Do we talk to a friend? Is it our spouse? Who is that person? And how do we process feeling sad or feeling frustrated? Are we talking mainly today about who do we talk to when we feel sad?
Yeah, I think that's it. A little bit of an extension of last week, because last week we talked about the importance of friendships overseas and kind of the ups and downs of making new friends and just how important it is to have community in general. So this is a little bit on the same theme, right? Of having those connections, those go-to people that just help us make it through our days, right?
Right. Like, who are those people? Who is the person that immediately comes to mind when something traumatic or upsetting or not so seriously devastating? It can be in a seriously devastating situation, but even in a small sadness situation, like, who are the people on your list that you want to talk to? And just, I've been reading a little bit about this and hearing more and more about this. Like, now that we have the scientific capability to kind of measure what's happening in our brain, we all kind of know on a basic level that when we're hurt or upset, we want to talk to someone, or we start voicing that, or even we're complaining to ourselves out loud sometimes or in our mind. But now we can measure like what happens in our brain after a conversation and processing it. And I think more and more science is realizing the value and the effect of like the calming effect that that has, and the hormone release and the serotonin and, you know, and it's lowering cortisol levels just to have a conversation as a way of processing your stress and your anxiety and even depression, all of these things that we're noticing, just having that conversation really has a valid impact on our emotional state.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. So have you run into anything where it talked about the kind of scientific findings behind journaling some of these things versus talking to an actual human? Like, I'm kind of interested, is it that element of talking to a living being that makes those physiological things happen? Or are they greater than, you know, dealing with some of this stuff on our own? Have you ever bumped into any of that?
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen or heard like the scientific data on journaling, if that journaling would be like the same release of emotion. But I know in What Happened to You, the book by Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah, they mentioned the having the conversation, being able to talk about it and how that impacts the brain and the releasing of the trauma. And also in How We Do the Work by Dr. Nicole LaPera, both completely fascinating books that I highly recommend, but mentioning kind of the science between just having that conversation, where I think so many of us at our own core level think, yeah, I need to talk about this, or I need to call my sister, or I need to call my partner. I have to, you know, there's that automatic feeling when something sad hits you or comes up that you want to talk to someone. But now, knowing that that really is part of the emotional process. And do we all have those people? And do we have those people when we move away from them and we can't call them because it's 3 a.m. for them? Like, are we, you know, how do we do all of that for ourselves? And do some people have 10 of those people or 20? Are those just your inner circle? How many people do you think you have in your reliable, I want to talk to when I'm hurting circle?
So I know you mentioned like it depends on where we live, like that kind of factors into it. And I was thinking like, I kind of need a person on every continent, mm-hmm. like so that I can quickly look at the time and be like, you know, who's the most handy right now? Because that's certainly, even just that element of being removed from you know, where you grew up or where you've lived for the last 10 years or where you lived before you started this transient life. You know, we live in such a small world now because we're so connected, but at the same time, geographically, there's a huge distance, and that can impact me, at least mentally, thinking like I'm so far away.
Mm-hmm.
And it is harder to make those connections sometimes into a different time zone. So I was thinking about this, and I mean, I'm just going to throw a number out there because I kind of listed my people, and I'm going to say maybe like 5. And the more I thought about this, I think it kind of depends for me on what I'm sad about at the moment. Mm. If it's expat sad, then I'm more likely to turn to an expat friend because I know that they're going to understand and yeah. I don't have to explain anything. Or if it's about my kids, like kids sad, I'm more likely to go to my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
He's like my first, go-to. And then if it's like random life stuff or family, I go to my sister. And then I was thinking if it's kind of a general like homesickness, it's my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's others in there, but I think that's my bubble. What about you?
Oh, that's so good. For me, I don't know if it's, but I didn't make a list, but it is definitely, it's like dependent on the issue, right? Like, I think kids, it is my spouse for sure, because he and I know our kids more than anyone else, right? Like he's going to understand that issue at the same level that I understand. And I won't have to explain like, oh, but when she was sick, she acted this way. So that's how we know that this is happening. Yeah, it depends, but I definitely have a craving for that person who understands this issue, right? Or if it's like, if the person, if the sadness, if the argument is with my spouse, I'm not going to go to him for support, right? He's going to tell me like, no, we don't agree. So then I want to talk to someone else. So I think, and I'm also thinking it changes over the years, right? Like my friends in high school were definitely my high school friends, and who are still friends now, but they are not the friends that I call with a current sadness. Like, hey, I haven't talked to you in 7 months. I just want to dump this problem on you. So those friends are changing, and it depends too on what's happening in their life. If they're going through something, then that's not going to be the friend that I call when I'm in need of support. But I think just having them is so important. When I would get down to maybe 1 or 2 on my list, or if it felt like people weren't on my list or weren't available, that would definitely, you know, I would be sad and I would be seeking out those. I want more genuine, authentic, like friendships where I can share my sadness. And in that moment, I'm not seeking pity. I'm not seeking, you know, it has to be someone specific to be able to give me the response I want, which is that empathy and that understanding. I listened again to Brené Brown's talk on empathy versus sympathy, how she's always saying sympathy is saying like, oh yeah, that sucks. At least, you know, it's not the end of the world or something, which is not as comforting as someone saying, I've been there. I get that feeling.
Yes, I love that. Brené Brown came to my mind too as we were starting this conversation, because I can't remember what book or what talk it was in, but she has this little section where she talks about these people that we go to. It's like our person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she has a name for it, but I'm blanking. But she's kind of talking about, you know, she talks and studies a lot about vulnerability. And she says part of being vulnerable is choosing the groups of people or people that you want to be vulnerable with. And mm-hmm. she talks about about the importance of being really careful with who you're opening up to. And in this, you know, social media sharing everything stage of humanity, it's, you know, we see a lot of sharing, and she calls it even oversharing, and that sometimes that oversharing isn't doing for us what we think it might by being so vulnerable to the hundreds or however many followers we have, but that if we take that information and, you know, give it to a trusted friend, then a lot of times that's a healthier interaction and exchange than choosing to just spread all this, you know, information about ourselves anywhere and everywhere, just for the sake of being real and authentic. And I love that she talks about that. And I was going to ask you, like, is there a common theme or characteristic among your people that you go to? So I love that you're talking about, like, I heard you say, like, genuine and authentic and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do you find those, do you feel like you find those among all your people that you're turning to?
Yeah, definitely. Those are the people on my list. And that's who I think I'm always kind of seeking and craving that in the back of my mind when I'm in that vulnerable, you know, meeting new friends stage or seeking out new friends or in a new place and friend dating or whatever we call it. I'm definitely on some level checking for those things. Like, those are the people that I want in my circle. And if I get any sense that someone is more superficial or they are not interested in that, right? Like, if they are oozing any kind of perfection, I'm immediately drawn away from them. I'm not interested in pursuing a friendship with someone who seems like they have it all together. So I'm definitely looking for people who are more willing to share their own faults and flaws and sadness and upset so that I feel comfortable doing that myself.
Hey, that is why we're friends, because I am a mess and you like messy people so that you can help us all.
I don't know, right? Like, some people would see us and be like, oh, you have it all together. Do people say that to you, Annalie? Like, oh, you have all your kids and your house looks so great and your family's so great and you have it all together. People have said that to me in the past.
Yeah, I was going to say people, I've heard that before, and then I had my fourth child and I haven't heard that anymore.
No one says that anymore.
3 years ago, that stopped. And now they're talking behind my back. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
No, I feel like I am such a mess, but I have had people throughout my life say, oh, you have everything together. You have the perfect life. Definitely in teaching yoga, somehow I was in such a, like, that was a great period of time for me, and I was teaching 10 classes a week. I think about it now, like, what shape I was in and how fit I was, and people saying, wow, you're so calm and you have, you know, your children are nice and well behaved. Like, this, I could be aware that there would be a way to look at my life and think that everything was perfect. And it's never been perfect. Of course, I'm a mess and I'm falling apart and, you know, yelling sometimes. And I don't even know, never making a proper dinner, those kinds of things. So it's interesting to just think that people could have that impression. And I could be misinterpreting that for people too. I could assume that people's life looks too perfect.
Yes. No. Yeah. I think that totally is the case. And I think we were talking about this a little bit last week, that it's easy to make those initial judgments about someone just based off of a really short first interaction and think, I don't know if we're going to get along, or I'm super different than this person, or they're different from me. But, you know, the more time you spend with them, sometimes those things fall down and you end up just really getting along. Mm-hmm. But I remember, now you're bringing a memory to my mind of when we did, you know, COVID hit, and we all, so many of us left Baku, and we set up that support group kind of as an accidental thing, but it ended up working really well for mm-hmm. a lot of expat moms and ourselves. And I remember one of the first calls we had where we're starting to talk about our experience of leaving Baku early, I basically broke down into tears and started naming like all the things I had been feeling in the last month. And one of the moms and our friends from Baku came on, and she said, I didn't know this side of you. All I saw was just happy, like you said, kind of put together,
yeah,
Annalie. And I didn't know that you know, she didn't say this, but like, basically like had this dynamic, like I had this other side of me. And when she said that, I was glad that we were connecting, but at the same time, I was like, oh gosh, like, I don't know if that's necessarily what I want people to, their impression to be of me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really want to put off that vibe that I have it together, because in my experience, like what we're saying, if there's not that level of perfection, I feel like those friendships can be a little bit more intimate, and it means that people feel comfortable coming to me and sharing things with me. And so I was like, well, good. I'm glad we're at the point where she's seeing the human in me, but I totally get what she's saying. And my neighbor here, you know, we kind of talked about this last week. We're both trying to find those friends that we feel we can have this connection with, but she's started to talk about the bidding process and where they're going to move next. And this is their first time going through it. And I could tell it was hard for her, like this really stressful time. And there was this element of sadness in knowing that she wouldn't be going to this place that they really wanted to go, because they have family living there. And I remember thinking, like, we haven't gotten too personal with each other, but I remember thinking like, this is so nice. Like, she's actually kind of moving our relationship to the next level, where she's lingering, you know, at the front step a little bit longer to tell me about this heartache that she has about this bidding process. And I was grateful for her in that moment, because I think it takes courage to do that with someone that you might not know very well. Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like she's taking those steps to help our friendship move along. And I just appreciate that.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm thinking now that you're at like a next level mindfulness than me. I still would love for people to have that impression of me, that I had it together or had a great life. That sounds appealing, but I mean, I don't actually want anyone to think I have a perfect life, but giving off that impression would not be such a bad thing, that I had it together, was less falling apart. But also in my work as like counseling with people too, that for years, I feel like the training was, don't let anyone know your life isn't perfect. And like in college, all of my classes in college were, you know, open-ended listening, but not interjecting myself into that conversation at all, or not being, I don't know, not giving away that like I had also had any struggles in my life. And then I've just felt so free when that kind of went away, and I realized that you can be a therapist and be an authentic person and still have all the skills to listen and not bring that into a session, but be able to. I'm going off track now, but it just made me more aware of when I was sharing myself and my flaws, and when that felt safe, and when I was being vulnerable in doing that, and when I, you know, had to put up some kind of false facade of I have it all together and nothing is wrong in my life and everything in my life has been resolved and is going all according to plan, you know?
Yeah, that is so fascinating to me because I think of the different mental health professionals I've worked with, you know, a therapist, a life coach, and I mean, I imagine that it must just be personal preference, right? But the times that that person opened up a little bit to me, even just like gave me a little peek into something that they struggle with or kind of having that element of empathy, like I see you mm-hmm. because I've been through something like that. It does help me because I think it kind of brings us to the same level versus like a one up, one down position. Like yes. I feel like kind of levels the playing field and like they're definitely still the mental health professional, but there's also that element of trust and empathy. So do you find that when with your clients through the years, do you see that being more helpful when you open up and give them that little glimpse of humanness, or does it just depend on the client?
So I think now, because now that is my style, and I tell everyone up front before we ever would work together that this is how I operate. You're going to know things about my life. You might see me in daily life or yelling at my kids in the grocery store. That won't impact our session, but you're welcome to know that I live a flawed, imperfect life. So I think the clients that are coming to me are certainly drawn to that. And as you said, it's the same for me. Any mental health professional that I've spoken to in my life, I feel more able to heal and connect with what I'm going through when I have a person who I am talking to who I know gets, understands this on my level. Rather than talking to someone who has no experience of this or is giving away nothing, someone who, you know, I just have that like cold interaction with of knowing nothing about their life. Yeah. So I'm sure there are professionals out there who work best with clients not knowing anything about the life of the professional, and those clients will be drawn to that person. But for me, it's definitely the clients who know that they can talk to me and say, you're a mom, you get it. So you've been through this with the teenagers and that's where the connection is. And then, and that's what I'm seeking in friendships too, right? I want that understanding. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I love that in this conversation, we kind of started with friends and family, but then we shifted to therapists and like mental health professionals because it's totally pertinent to this topic. Like who do we go to when we talk, when we're feeling sad? And I think sad is such a general term for all these different feelings of from depression to, you know, homesickness or low level funk or something and everything in between. But the fact is like mental health professionals are certainly a part of this conversation and we have to keep a beat on that.
Yes. Right. Like, and these can be the people on our list should be right. I fully believe every person on the planet deserve from like age 12 and up, like you deserve a space that you can go without judgment and talk. And even like, how do we treat ourselves? How thinking of the people we talk to when we're sad? And you and I have talked about talking to ourselves, right? And like, it's that voice in your head or what pops up for you when you stand in front of the mirror in the morning, right? If I am saying to myself like, oh, you look like such a mess, why am I saying that to myself? I would never say that to a friend, right? If I can start hearing how I'm talking to myself or when I'm in a place of sadness or I'm dealing with a problem. And if I'm talking to myself and saying, oh, why did you do that, Angie? Why did you say that? That was so stupid. You shouldn't have handled it that way. Then I'm not talking to someone, you know, in a healthy way that's going to help me resolve my sadness. And so can we talk to ourselves as a friend would talk to ourselves? If you're the only person that you have to talk to in that moment, I've even heard of journaling and writing it out and then writing the response from like getting your mind into a different place and then reading through and writing a response is like, I can understand why you said that, or you said that because you were upset and now you might say something different, or you wouldn't use those words, or those words came from anger. And it's a much more sympathetic, understanding way to talk to ourselves.
Yeah, I love that. And really, what's the harm in taking 2 minutes to actually write the names of these people down that hold that space for us and carry that empathy and trust? And that when we are having these hard moments where we're having that inner critic, you know, negative feedback loop just go wild in our heads, sometimes it's helpful for me to just think really specifically about one of those people on that list. Like, okay, I'm going to take on this person's, you know, attention or
yeah,
what have you right now, and think specifically, like, what would Angie tell me right now? Mm-hmm. And I've even heard, like, you know, some meditations that are kind of geared toward loving kindness that you can, that I've done, that you call to mind to one of these people and channel that compassion that they have for you. If we can't muster it up ourselves for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like that happens. That's very normal.
Right.
But we have a lot of people out there that love us, and our listeners have a lot of people out there that love them. And so I think it's important to make these lists and realize
yes. Where
people are. Yeah.
And we are those people. We are the people who love our listeners. Anyway, yeah. I love this idea. Like, you and I have been talking about hatching this idea of how can we create this community, which is kind of the purpose of our podcast, is for you and I, for our own personal selfish, we just like talking to each other and it is therapeutic, but then how can we create that community and provide that space where people can listen and genuinely, intentionally come to share a problem and be met with understanding, and creating a group just like that group we created that was really your brainchild, Annalie, of after we all went through, you know, COVID and together. I think it was just so powerful to have that group and know the group is there. Even when we weren't interacting, being able to think throughout the week of, I'm not the only person struggling with this right now. So I love our idea of coming soon, of creating this group where there is more interaction and more personal connection.
Yeah, stay tuned. For those listening, we, in the name of creating more community in the world among expat moms and expats who truly share a unique set of experiences, we want to hear more from you, our listeners, and just build a sense of community and belonging and connection, because like Angie said, these are some of the building blocks of this podcast. So stay tuned. It's coming soon. We're excited to announce some things in the next few weeks.
Yay. All right. Thanks for the talk.
Thank you. Ciao.